Hello. Welcome to this First Thoughts edition of the Once Upon a Time Fan Podcast, presented by Roni's Own Media and Roni'sOwn.com. There are a number of ways that you can stay connected and interact with the show. Our main website address is onceuponatimepodcast.com. Our Twitter name is OUAT Podcast. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/OUAT Podcast. Our email address is feedback@onceuponatimepodcast.com. And our voicemail line phone number is 657-333-0626. This is an unofficial podcast dedicated to the ABC TV show Once Upon a Time. Your hosts are Jeff and Colleen Roney from Orange County, California. And now, on with the show.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Once Upon a Time Fan Podcast. This is the First Thoughts episode for The Queen is Dead. So a lot of stuff has been going on, and I don't want to spend too much time talking about it, but we were at Paley Fest yesterday, and a lot of cool stuff happened there.
Yes.
But a lot of live streaming and a lot of blogging has been done about it already.
Right.
And I kind of don't want to talk too much about that. Although we did meet some awesome listeners, Brianne, Tiffany, and Paige and Marissa, and Carla, Rose Angel, 619.
No, 19, just 19, I think. Anyway.
Okay. So we did have a chance to say hi and talk a bit. Mm-hmm. So that was really cool. And then we saw The Queen is Dead. And then we saw a bit of The Miller's Daughter.
Yes.
Like the first act, I think they called it.
Yeah, they call it first act.
So anyway, but we're going to focus on The Queen is Dead. And how's everything? It's been a little while, so we're trying to kind of adjust the mics.
Yeah.
Sorry this is late. We've had a long weekend. I do not want to go all into it. But once we had all the notes lined out for last night, I was just nodding out. So
it's been a long weekend. Yep. So
okay, The Queen is Dead.
Yes.
And the two things I wanted to say is, obviously, there is a queen that dies.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that another queen's heart dies as well.
Yeah.
As we'll get to a certain scene and you'll see what I mean.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think the first thing I noticed is it had a very medieval feel to it. And let me explain what I mean. Is we saw chambermaids that looked like nuns to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then also there's a scene of a crowd with some of the costumes looks very medieval to me, which was later on, and we'll highlight that. But that's one of the things that came to me. There was an early scene where Snow's mother was giving her a tiara for her birthday, and also a bit of like a coronation, kind of?
I think, yeah, it seemed crowning. Like it was more of a, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
an official, this is the princess, kind of like a coming out, which normally you don't do until you're like 16.
Quinceañera, kind of a thing.
That, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So the one thing about Once Upon a Time is there are these repeating things that you hear and you hear again. For instance, I was watching a bit of the season one finale, and Emma actually threatened Regina the way Gold threatened the Charming family. Emma said, if Henry dies, you die.
Right.
And that's what Rumpel said. If anything happens to Belle,
right,
I'm going to kill all of you.
Yeah.
So that kind of a thing. And this is what happened again, is Snow's mother said, my mother gave this to me. Her mother gave this to her. I'm going to give this to you. And it was the tiara.
Right. Right.
And so it was very similar to the green ring. Charming's mother gave to him and all that. And there's been a couple of things that have been passed down, like the watch, in, the Frankenstein given to the brother.
Heirlooms, family heirlooms.
Yes, right. And we've kind of touched on before how important they are and what they represent. Are they magic? Are they not? That kind of a thing. So we kind of knew this was coming, and this is almost, you have to do this, but we saw the bratty Snow. We saw that for the first time.
Right. But being a privileged 12-year-old little girl, you kind of expect that, you know?
Right.
Because again, you know, she's royal. She knows she's royal, and she developed that, you know, that superior attitude.
Up to this point, we've seen a very kind Snow, a very a naive, almost to a fault Snow.
Right, right.
She wants to help, but doesn't think about all the repercussions of telling a secret or that kind of a thing.
Right.
Because she thinks, as she's swayed by Cora or other situations, that she'll just make decisions and tell things or do things.
Because it would be better.
It'll help.
Right.
But this time we do see this kind of classic, bratty, royal thing.
Right.
And we've talked before about good people. King Leopold was a good man. He was a good leader. And we saw Snow's mother was another one of those good leaders. And she tried to really instill in Snow, listen, this coronation, this celebration isn't really, it's not for the servants to cater to you. It's for you to cater to.
Honor them.
Right. And because her mother said, we are all the same. You know,
which if you think about it, not only did her mother pass down the crown to her, the tiara, she passed down her wisdom that I'm pretty sure her mother gave to her. So again, more family heirlooms, but this time in the form of, you know, wisdom.
Yep. And good sage advice, like always hold goodness in your heart.
Right.
You know, and even though we've seen, you know, obviously heart is another one of the kind of themes that run through this episode, but also it's heart of darkness. We can see that hearts that really try to hold good can be changed.
Sure.
Can turn. It's like anybody in life is situations come their way. And there's the phone. So, I don't think the battery's good on that. Well, here we go. There we go. And they'll call back. For sure they will. All right. So, and another thing that kind of stood out to me was the term rule justly. And I think there's this idea of a good king or a good ruler to rule justly. And, you know, we've talked about different terms throughout this series, justice, mercy, that kind of a thing. And so what was interesting, the first scene that we see of Mary Margaret, she was looking into a mirror, which was kind of interesting for her to do that. I don't know. Interesting.
Well, think about it. Later on in the scene or in the episode, when we see her as the young girl looking in the mirror, getting the crown.
Right. Right, so that's a tie together.
Right, and I'm sure that was what she was actually remembering, because the gestures were similar. So I think that's what we're dealing with here.
All right, and so Charming was trying to, you know, create a secretive birthday meal.
Right.
And then we find that a birthday for Mary Margaret, you want to just unplug it? Oh, podcasting early in the day, people. Yes, sir. All right. So he was trying to covertly create this kind of a, no, I'm just, you know, making breakfast. And she said, no, I know what this is all about. And so that's why I wrote, birthday is not happy for Snow / Mary Margaret.
Right.
And then we find out why. She does get the tiara. And this is where you and I had kind of a disagreement. So let's kind of line out what we thought, and then we'll let people,
okay,
you know, email or voicemail or tweet, whatever. I think that Johanna lied about how she got the tiara. I just don't think that she went to Gold Shop and just kind of jimmied the door open.
No,
strolled in and picked it up. And
I don't think she did that either.
Or bought it, because that would have been the first time somebody bought anything from the pawn shop. So,
well, but that doesn't mean that it didn't happen.
Okay.
Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And who knows, while, you know, between the time that the curse was broken, she mm-hmm. could have gone in there.
Sure.
And that, who knows? We never saw any transaction between her and gold.
The only reason I say that is later on, I got the feeling that she was not in control, but I think she was under duress by Cora to do that. So, anyway.
Who knows?
Yeah.
And again, we don't know, so there's any number of possibilities, but anyway.
So initially, we have this person, Johanna, that was in Storybrooke. Nobody knew she was there. To me, it was almost like Catherine kind of appearing.
Well, really what it is and it's true. Charming even said this. If you think about it, it's absolutely true. Snow's been gone for a good portion of the time since the curse broke anyway.
Right.
She hasn't been around. She's been busy. She's, you know, been dealing with some other stuff. So this whole let's relax and go see if we can find all of our friends, there hasn't been any time for it.
And I'm going to jump ahead and then we'll jump back to the flowers. Is how did Charming know Johanna?
Yeah, because he clearly knew who she was.
Maybe Snow told him stories.
Possibly, okay. Or my thinking is that when they got married, maybe Johanna was in the castle, and mm-hmm. now when Snow was ready to have Emma, she was there. Mm-hmm. Because if she was really the one who was kind of mothering her, especially after her father died, she probably took care of her.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of was her surrogate mother.
Right. Yeah, because they did kind of have that bond.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
very
she
much
said,
so.
I miss her too,
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
kind of a thing. So they had that shared experience,
right.
obviously.
Right.
And so my initial question is, what flowers are those? And I remember when we were at Paley Fest and we were watching the episode, you leaned over and said, snowdrops.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what you were talking about. But later on, you had a chance to look it up quickly and
I verified it because I was pretty sure they were snowdrops,
mm-hmm.
And I wasn't completely sure, but yeah, they're called snowdrops. Their actual official name is Galanthus, which is interesting because if you look at the word, it has the word gallant in it, which is kind of a nice word.
Yeah.
But they are snowdrops. They're very hardy. They bloom in the winter typically. So they're a winter flower. And they're great little flowers. They're very pretty, very simple, delicate.
On the card that accompanied the tiara gift for Mary Margaret Snow in mm-hmm. Storybrooke was a card that had the snowdrop on
it. Right.
I also caught a glimpse of the snowdrop on the banner for Snow's mother's kingdom. And so it's kind of pretty prominent. And then that's what Johanna was planting in that area.
Right.
She said, you know, for her honor, planting these.
Right.
Then the question I have is, as we go through, people understand why I'm asking this question. I wonder what's underneath there.
Right.
Things don't have a place for no reason. There's always a reason why things are where they are.
Well, that's what I was going to say is I'm pretty sure that there's either something buried under there, or because the odds of having just this like raised planter in the middle of the field there,
right,
kind of was a wacky little spot for it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So Circe.
Remember, okay. Circe? She was the goddess of magic.
Right.
Yeah. She, the whole, in Homer's Odyssey
mm-hmm.
there's a plant that they figured out in 1983, kind of an interesting coincidence,
right.
that plant that was referred to as a moly in Homer's Odyssey was very likely a snowdrop. mm-hmm. and that it has certain properties that were thought to be able to basically be the antidote for Cersei's poison. Hmm.
Okay.
Yep. Coincidence? I don't think so.
Nope.
Anyway.
And it also, I remember you say, were saying something about it also treated Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Which is another interesting theme that's within Once Upon a Time, forgetting
right.
that kind of
right.
thing.
Right. The properties, the same properties are possibly, it doesn't cure it, but it treats it.
Yeah.
So kind of an interesting, interesting little flower.
All right. So Hook was a busy man in this episode. And he found a crowbar. I don't know when the last time you've used a crowbar, but somehow he had one.
He found one.
He found one somewhere.
And, I mean, possibly he had one on his ship, but my guess is he probably found one somewhere else.
Maybe he was a Half-Life fan. That's a geeky video game reference right there. But anyway, so he knocked Charming in the noggin.
Well, he distracted him.
Yeah, and you had said, and it did sound like it, like maybe he tossed a doubloon or some kind of some a coin on the ground.
Yeah, something
and
that was...
And he turned around, and then that's when Hook came out with the crowbar and just whacked him one.
Right, right.
And so he got the keys and got the hook and knew exactly where to get the hook. But the interesting thing is the second time we saw it here at home is that he... We didn't see all the rest of the... He could have checked everywhere.
Right.
But the shot we saw overhead was when he opened the right drawer.
Right.
And got the hook out. It, not in a box, not in a lock box. It was in a locked drawer. But
right,
anyway,
right.
So,
covered by some sort of fabric.
Storybrooke really needs to consider, especially their police force, security. They really need to consider... better security.
Yeah, it's not terribly secure.
You know, they got keys to cells that just magically... I mean, it's an amazing place.
It is.
It'd be hard to keep anybody, you know. Even the doors at Granny's are just... Anyway.
Houdini would laugh at that place.
Yeah. All right. So the fake hand reminded me of young Frankenstein. Remember that...
Yes, the constable.
Yeah. And also there was an old Hammer horror film with a guy that had a fake hand that he kept switching out with a gun and different things. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. Cool. We're rolling here.
Good.
All right. The question I had is Johanna a servant mm-hmm. in Storybrooke? Or is she someone of, not necessarily royal, but is she owning something? Did they switch her? You know what I mean?
Right. Because a lot of times they do kind of an opposite thing, but then they also don't either.
Right,
so, I mean,
right.
if you think about it, Dr. Will was, well, he was a scientist, but, mm-hmm. you know, made him a doctor. You know, Mary Margaret, granted, she was a princess, but she was a teacher. So, I mean... I don't know. I'd be interested to know what she seemed like. She was, almost like she was retired or something. You know what I mean? But you can't tell from any of what we saw because we have no idea what she was doing.
I didn't recognize the house. It was a white house reminiscent of Regina's Storybrooke house, but I didn't recognize. I haven't seen it before, obviously.
No. And it was, I mean, it was a lovely house and nice big, you know, yard in the back. That
true.
Was kind of nice. With a pond behind it.
Hmm. And you saw people walking around by the pond,
said. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, or it could have been, like, by the bay, you know, around one of the bends of the bay. But anyway, yeah, it was a lovely house.
Now, I'm not a hater, but I'm going to kind of say this. That was some loud noise from the place they were digging.
Right.
All the way over. To the house where Johanna was tending those snowdrop flowers.
Right.
Because the sky was different. The look of the place was different. Look, I'm all for suspension of disbelief, but I'm telling you, she heard a sound.
Right.
And she walked, and they just went quickly over to where Regina and Cora were, and Regina was digging.
Right. Well, my question is, what exactly wished, I mean, what made that noise? Because just the simple digging noise wouldn't have made that loud of a noise.
It sounded like the shovel went in and hit a rock.
Yes, possibly.
And it was an echo.
Which was kind of funny because it's like, really not that close. It didn't seem like it was that close.
Right.
But what amazed, what I thought about too was, okay, so Snow has been trained by Ruby to track.
Hmm,
so perhaps she's honed her hearing skills a little more than, say, the average person. But
that's
then
a
I thought,
point. I would have never thought of that.
But yeah, I thought, you know, well, Johanna kind of hear it too, or did she not? And then it was, I think it was Snow who heard it, and then she startled Johanna, and she's like, no, just stay here. I'll be right back. My question is, how did Cora and Regina not realize that Snow was sitting there watching? They're
Another
usually
good
pretty good about sensing those types of things. I mean, how'd they know they were in the tower? Presumably they were watching them from somewhere else, but for the love of Pete,
no.
How did they know where they were?
Again, not a hater. But
not at all.
But I'm just saying this. You know, Cora had this epiphany about the map when Regina was like one quarter of the way or so digging. And then she goes, well, I don't think the map's right. Why couldn't we decide that before?
Like, right.
Maybe back at the... I mean,
well, and then why is Regina doing all the digging?
Right.
Why didn't Cora just use magic to kind of, you know, she can pop in and out of stuff.
Another
why can't she
point.
Just dig it up? You know what I mean?
I love Regina. It just gets so exasperated and she folds the map up, you know, in a kind of, it's a way I would fold up a map. I don't fold it up right. I just fold it up, you know, and she just gets so exasperated with Cora, you know, I mean, because it was kind of like, well, could you have said it before? Like, now you say it? We're out here? You know, I've got dirt all over my, you know, whatever. And it's just, it was funny with the way she folded the map, so. All right.
It was an interesting map, too, by the way.
Yeah,
The town line was a very distinct red line. Very distinct red line on the map.
Whoa.
And it was an officially created map, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like a normal regular map making company would make. They don't usually put town borders that distinct there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
I just thought it was kind of an interesting map.
So, okay. Here's a question that I have. Now, so the Dark One is a pretty famous tale. People knew about the Dark One.
Right.
More than likely, they knew about the dagger, so...
Well, see, that's the question I had. Do they really know about the dagger? Do they understand that? Because, again, Rumpel didn't know the tale. And if, in fact, when he became the Dark One, he wouldn't exactly want that to be common knowledge, because then he'd have people coming after him all the time, right?
Well, okay. The only scene I think about when we're talking about this is the scene in Skin Deep.
Right.
When they were grabbing the kids to fight in the Ogre's War.
Right.
And people, you know, it's like, you know, you're not going to take my child. Oh, the Dark One says yes, you know, or
right.
whatever.
That's a whole different ballgame. Knowing who the Dark One is, that I absolutely agree that they know who the Dark One is. They all know who the Dark One is.
Okay.
What I don't
the dagger.
Think,
okay.
the dagger right. is the piece I don't think everybody knows. I don't think that's a common knowledge kind of a thing because, again, that would invite, it's kind of like lottery winners.
Yeah.
Lottery winners, if they're really smart, they don't let everybody know who they are because then you got people coming out of the woodwork, right?
Right.
Same thing with Rumpel. He's got, you know, a weakness, so to speak, that is the source of his power. And if you know how to wield that power, why would you not attempt to even, you know, try to get it if you thought you could? You know what I mean?
Fair enough. So I wanted to kind of think through this before I ask this question because I don't want to ask a question and then all of a sudden 2 minutes later remember how, and then I have to edit stuff out. So I'd rather, that's why I did it this way. So how does Charming know about the dagger? For that matter, other different people. So
that's a good question. No, I agree with you. Right. That is a good question. How does he know about the dagger? How does he know what happened? Now, we know that Mary Margaret overheard Regina talking to Cora about it. So we can assume that because of the fact that when she went to him and said, you know, told him what was going on, she didn't have any time to tell him about the story about the dagger and what she heard about it. So all we know is he knew about it some other way.
Yeah.
And I can't recall if anybody ever told him that we've ever seen. I can't see that that's ever been said, but I could be wrong because I can't recall it being said openly to him.
Mm-hmm. So now, just to kind of build a case a bit, is August knew about it.
Right.
But there are lots of people that think that August wrote the book. So August probably knew a bunch, possibly, about things, but he didn't know where the dagger was. But then he found it and then tried to use it. So,
correct. Anyway. Well, and then the other thing is that August could have found out about it from Bay.
Fair enough. Okay.
Because Bay knows
switching,
about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Time. Okay. Got it.
So that's the only thing I can think of that would actually, you know, be logistical. We didn't see the whole entire conversation between Ben and August. Mm-hmm. We saw bits and pieces of it. So there may have been another conversation about it that would help. It's possible that the Blue Fairy knew about it and told August, because again, she would know about that. She right. would be one of the ones. And perhaps, maybe, she told Charming and Snow about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we may traverse onto thin ice, but I need to do a little public service announcement now.
Okay.
First of all, I want to thank everyone for retweeting and tweeting out, I'm listening to the First Thoughts episode of, in this case, The Queen is Dead,
mm-hmm.
At OUAT podcast. I really appreciate, and then including the link as well,
yeah.
of which I tweet out, because then people know it's from us, and then it can have a link to listen. I was talking to somebody at the Paley Fest yesterday who listened to two of the many Once Upon a Time podcasts, and they didn't know about us. And so I was kind of surprised, because normally oncers kind of find out certain things.
Right.
So I say again, thank you for those who retweet with the link, who we are, what the episode is.
Mm-hmm.
And I would ask that others would can help out. If you're listening to this, thank you.
Yes.
I really hope that you're on Twitter. And if you're not, obviously you can't do what I'm telling you. But retweeting is very important. Tweeting out, I'm listening to the explain, you know, from us, and then a link to that, please. Or just mention that you're listening to it. Also, if you're listening to this podcast or any of our episodes, keep your smartphone note open, or keep a little pencil and paper next to you and say, man, that's a great theory, or that's an interesting question. And just kind of jot it down and then tweet out, you know, Jeff and Colleen at OUAT podcast ask this question, and type out the question and say, I think it is this, so that we can continue on this Twitter life of this podcast. So it's not just audio, but it's actually kind of growing into this discussion, you know, the Facebook group or Twitter or whatever. I really would ask that you would do that, because it expands the life of what we're doing here. So, mm-hmm. And then it also gives people opportunity to, credit us with a thought or question. You know, I think less and less, with more podcasts out there, no one really gets a theory that's all their own, but you know, we try.
I can honestly say all my theories are my own, because I don't listen to any of their podcasts. So yeah. I don't know what they're saying out there. I don't pay attention. So all my theories are my own. If someone happens to get the same theory as me, then great.
Yeah.
But these are all me, coming from me, solely from me.
Yep. All right. So I think that is all for that. Now, here's one of the things that I came upon is Henry. When we started watching Once Upon a Time, we always kind of thought about who's the most powerful person. First, maybe everybody thought it was the evil queen, Regina. Then the second thing is maybe it was Rumpel.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Henry. I think it's Henry is the most powerful person, and I'll tell you why. It's because he is basically controlling Regina.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
the decisions that she's making, she's having to think, what will Henry think?
Right.
Emma, kind of the same way.
Sure.
Neil, the same way. Mm-hmm. And now also Gold is afraid of him.
Yeah.
Based on what we found out in Manhattan. So
what we think we found out in Manhattan.
True. Right.
I still hold. But that's, I still hold
that's,
my theory.
But okay. But Gold is thinking like most everyone.
Sure.
At this point.
Sure. Absolutely.
And I think the reveal is going to be shocking to him. You know. So, but I think Henry is the most powerful person in the world. Now, I'm not saying he's going to become Zeus or something.
No.
But I am saying that just being who he is, mm-hmm. in all the circles that really kind of connect mm-hmm. with him, he is the most powerful person
yeah.
in Once Upon a Time.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It was kind of a quick question about where's the best pizza. And Neil said something about the
Kingdom of Demarion.
Kingdom of Demarion and the islands of Zorn.
Yes.
Or something about Zorn. And you looked up Johannes Zorn is a botanist and a pharmacist.
So. Yeah, he was a German Johannes Zorn, which is kind of interesting because Johannes is the male version of Johanna. Or Johanna.
Hmm. Yeah,
so if you think
yeah.
about it, it's yeah. kind of an interesting thing. And Demarion, I didn't find a whole lot on Demarion.
No. I think that was just kind of a fun thing.
He may have made that
there.
Up. And for all we know, there's, I mean, any number of things that they could have, you know, combined to make that name. So, but I thought it was kind of fun that the pizza place they went to was Arco de Triunfo. Which is the Italian version of the L'Arc de Triomphe, which is the French monument to fallen soldiers from the French Revolutionary and Napoleonic Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And that may or may not have any significance. It just may have been a coincidence. But I thought it was kind of an interesting little choice for where they went to eat.
Well, and I think there's another theme that we discussed during the whale episodes and, mm-hmm. and the Frankenstein episodes is this clash between magic potions and pharmaceuticals. That's it. creations mm-hmm. is that when you create a pharmaceutical pill or something, that's more based in science, but a magic potion, which could use different things from the forest.
Well, I'm sure it includes chemistry.
Includes
type.
Magic
right.
in it. And so this kind of clash. And so, you know, the more, I mean, you know, this Johannes Zorn could be nothing. But I think it's interesting that we still are coming up with this whole plant and
right.
pharmacist and all
and,
that.
And the whole point was that Johanna was planting snowdrops.
Right. Yep.
And she was just very into that.
And those are the antidote for poisons. And
right.
So, yeah,
right. Contain the antidote for poisons.
Which was another thing, obviously, that we're going to get to in a bit, an antidote, poison.
Correct.
All right. And then Henry mentioned that he needed to get a camera and go to a museum.
Yep.
So I don't know, want to throw that out. So one last chance. I don't know why I wrote that down, but somebody said that.
That was the conversation between Mary Margaret and Regina.
That's right.
When they were in the diner mm-hmm. and they were sitting down.
Make
and,
the right choice.
Right, making the right choice.
Yeah.
There was a point where, the phrase was, Regina said, that much is clear. And I can't remember the exact conversation mm-hmm. piece.
Right.
But right when she said that, the camera panned behind a glass cake plate.
Right.
And they were both cloudy
mm-hmm.
until it started. Regina was clear. And yeah, then it panned right. across. Right when she said, that much is clear, nothing was clear.
Mm-hmm.
And then she went, and then the camera kept panning. And there we see Mary Margaret. And then we got the shot of both of them together. So I don't know the significance of that other than it was just an interesting point in time where literally right as Regina said, that much is clear,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't clear at all.
Yep.
It was very cloudy. So symbolic, I kind of think there might be something to that. But yeah, that whole conversation between Mary Margaret and Regina was very interesting.
it reminded me of two mob bosses kind of discussing a truce.
Squaring
off. Just like,
yeah.
Look, you keep going in this way. Well, I mean, that's what Mary Margaret said. Mm-hmm. There's war coming.
Yeah.
Make sure you're on the right side.
Right.
If you watched, any number of Martin Scorsese films about the mob,
Right.
So.
Well, it's interesting now that I'm thinking about this is, so we know Charming, Snow, and Emma.
Right.
Is Mary Margaret now assuming, because we find out that Gold is Henry's grandfather, that he's on their side as well?
Well, Henry's still the flip vote, though. It's
sure
interesting.
He is.
I mean, and based on his comment about the pizza that is cheesy and good and doesn't lie,
right?
We kind of see where at this point he's leaning. So Emma knows that she's got a long road ahead.
Absolutely.
And I think that's why maybe she went ahead with what Gold said, is we need to get Neil back to Storybrooke. Because I think building a home with a father and a mother, I'm not making any big statements, but I'm just saying to create a home for him.
But it wasn't really so much that he was looking for a home. It was having his father's influence in his life is what I think he was really driving at. Not literally building a home. And
No. But I mean, we've kind of talked about it before. I think, if you getting to know your father, I think is important as getting to know your mother, where things come from, your DNA, your whatever. So,
And I think too, especially because Gold it's so close to home for him, is that his son was without a father. And I think he doesn't want his son, his grandson, even though he's kind of terrified of Henry right now, or at least worried about him and not sure what to do about him. I think that he still ultimately wants his grandson to not be without a father.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows, too, that with his grandson in town, that'll bring his son back to him.
Yep.
So it'll be real interesting to see how that all kind of shapes itself out.
Because Gold mentioned that either Neil comes to Storybrooke or Henry will go back to New York.
Mm-hmm.
Or he may have even stayed.
I mean,
we don't know what would have happened there if... Anyway, so... So Regina said that Snow added the evil to the queen.
Right.
And I remember back in the pilot, she called her an evil witch.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it was one of those female emotive moments where she kind of twisted it up a bit. Instead of evil queen, she's nothing but an evil witch. So, anyway.
And I'm sure she probably wanted to call her something else.
Well,
because that's
possibly.
Usually when you're that angry. That's where your mind goes.
And the thing is, I know that we have a varied group of listeners, but I'm going to mention some things that really I see through my lenses of life. And hypocrite is one of those words that sticks out when people in general refer to religious churchy people.
Right.
They always say the hypocrites.
Right.
And it was interesting that when Regina was talking about being good, she said, just having dinner with those hypocrites. And in that discussion, they did that in Revenge of the Sith, making the good side seem bad. And if you listen to Palpatine, he does build this case of, well, the Jedi you think are really good, but actually they're evil and they're not in your best interest. And that's what Regina was saying.
Right.
I made the right decision. I did the right thing. And little Snow, and I think even big Snow, older Snow, crosses that bridge as well.
Mm-hmm.
Is being good and doing the right thing worth it?
You know,
and that's what she was saying. Have a dinner with those hypocrites that were judging me and all. I don't think she said judge, but
saying that they would, one thing, but not really meaning it.
Right.
Yeah.
And Regina said, power is how you get things.
Yeah.
And I think we'll get back to what Snow's mother said, which was different. I remember there was a scene when we saw a very interesting flashback to get the full story. And I think a lot of people, not just me,
right,
knew that when Snow rode by on the horse in the episode Stable, the Stable Boy, mm-hmm, that she wasn't just, it just didn't happen.
Nope.
There was, I figured that Cora had spooked that horse to ride by just at the right time for that purpose, for that reason, so that Regina would go and rescue her and kind of then their paths would cross and then the whole rest of it would happen. My big question is was King Leopold a double or was it actually Richard Schiff? I'm leaning toward it was somebody that they made up to look like him.
Are we missing a whole mess of stuff in between?
No, I wrote it down. Okay. So we'll, I mean, we're skipping around, but.
Okay, I just want to make sure because I'm like going, I think we're missing some pieces of the puzzle here.
We'll get there.
Okay.
But, because this is the second time I saw it, so.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, I don't think it was Richard Schiff. I think it was somebody else.
And it's very possible it was a dub, but
anyway. You mentioned when we saw it that Snow's mother seemed to exhibit signs of consumption.
Yeah, because typically, which is also known as tuberculosis in this day and age, is typically coughing up blood is a classic symptom of tuberculosis. Now, that's what I assumed at first, but obviously we saw that no, in fact, it was not that at all. It was actually poison. But again, I don't know what poison she used that would make her cough up blood. I'm sure there's something that does that, but the symptoms that she showed out of nowhere, the coughing up blood is usually associated with consumption or tuberculosis.
I believe it's when, little Snow was talking to, now here's where we're going to go crazy for a second here. I'm going to try and say it the right, Rol Gorham. What she said.
Yes.
That I'm almost certain is Cora. So let's establish that. When I say blue fairy, I mean the real blue fairy.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw tonight, and it was interesting.
Last night.
that we saw the reveal that
Rol Gorham
was Cora when she changed from that form to...
I'm not going to agree that that's correct. And here's why I'm saying that.
Okay.
She was not referred to at all as Rol Gorham in any way, shape, or form, except for that one episode where Moraine is the one who said that was the Rol Gorham. So I don't want to call her Rol Gorham. She's the Blue Fairy, even though it was not the real Blue Fairy.
Okay, well, then it'll get confusing. I will do my best.
Just call her Cora Fairy or Blue Fairy. I'm serious because I don't want to use the term because that's a stretch.
Cora Fairy, that's what we'll call her. So I think that Cora Fairy was the one that talked to Rumpelstiltskin.
Exactly. And I do agree with you. She's the one who did that, which actually begs the question, so then is Rumpel really pulling all the strings? Doesn't seem like
it. No, I think Cora is pulling all the strings. I think Cora is behind it all. Now, I think someone is behind her pulling the entire strings. But as we see more of the story unfold, I'm thinking that Cora is more powerful than Rumpel right now. It's because she can transform into these formative beings that are guiding these people into making these good decisions.
She's a shapeshifter.
Right. When Cora Fairy tells someone that the only way out of it is dark magic, that should have been a red flag.
Right.
Like, wait a minute. This is not
fairies
right.
Don't deal in dark magic.
Or the pause. She had the pause in this episode.
Yes.
When, you know, Snow was saying, you know, is she going to die? Which
is
again,
there anything that we can do?
Is there anything
there must
that
be
we
something.
Can do? Then there's a pause. And then she says, there is isn't it?
Yeah.
So, and it's the same thing when Rumpel was talking to, I believe, Cora Fairy.
Right.
you know, is there any way that we can get Bay back? Is there a portal jump? Is it a, you know, da da da? All he listed off all those things.
Right.
There is, isn't there?
Right.
A curse. And then she goes, well, yes. Now, why would a blue fairy talk about a curse?
Right.
I believe that when Jiminy Cricket talked to the real, in my opinion, the real blue fairy, that was her.
Right.
Because we know later on that Snow said to the blue fairy, I kept your secret. And she goes, I don't know what you're talking about.
Right. I never told you that.
Right. Right. So that's...
And see, Snow doesn't realize that she wasn't talking to her. She will eventually, though, I'm sure, figure it out. But again, it comes back to, like you said, and we talked about this yesterday, is that, yeah, the blue fairy that when Rumple called Rolgorim and the blue fairy appeared, that's why I don't think that that was the blue fairy. It was Cora. Because again, Cora's whole goal was, quote unquote, to make Regina the queen. But there's ultimately something beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
So Cora is as much of a manipulator as Rumple is. Cora's even worse.
Because she does it behind the scenes. And she impersonates other people, takes on their form.
Right.
To kind of make things happen. But it never comes back to her.
Right.
I mean, a classic example is the whole Archie situation.
Right.
Things happen, but she's not me.
Well, you know, and here's the thing, too, is, you know, this is a case where the student has overtaken the master.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know that Rumple taught her everything she knows.
Right.
So she's, I think, outplayed him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's going to continue to outplay him until he figures out what's going on and finds a way to stop her.
Well, played is an interesting comment, and we'll bring that term up again. Okay, so to me, death is really the biggest power. That's really the equalizer. When somebody dies, because according to Rumpelstiltskin, magic cannot bring the dead back.
Right.
Once they're dead, they're dead. That's
dead is
it.
Dead, right.
Mm-hmm. However, science with a magical heart can bring somebody back from the dead, but not...
It can reanimate tissue.
Right. So
can't bring somebody back from the dead because, remember, they weren't themselves.
Okay, but I just...
Yeah.
If I didn't mention that, somebody
would. No, I know.
So
I know.
I wanted to
I'm just
of,
letting you know. Yeah. I agree with you, though. I totally agree.
Okay. Now, again, I'm not a hater. I love Once Upon a Time. I love how they film things, and I was wrong last time I mentioned this. It was called Gas Town, I think, in Vancouver is where they filmed this.
Okay.
I say Gaslight, and that's San Diego, and that's a...
And that's actually Gas Lamp, but...
See, I don't even know. That's why I need you. I can't. I'm no good at.
It's a very nice area of San Diego. It's a fun little
area. Great Brazilian restaurant. If you're on Atkins, that's the place to go. Okay, so the hot dog stand. I'm tired of seeing that hot dog stand. I saw that hot dog stand 10 times yesterday, and I'm like, I'm tired. Can we walk away from it? Can we go somewhere else? We see that V-shaped building,
which is
that's supposed to represent New York.
Right.
And then we see the hot dog stand.
The V-shaped building, by the way, is the Flatiron Building.
Okay.
That's an actual legitimate building in New York, although that was clearly not the real one. That was a nice... You know.
It reminds me of Flatiron Steak, and now I'm hungry. Okay. So Hook... Boy, he has got a fast ship, man. That ship just goes...
Rumple said it was the fastest in all the realms.
He's in Storybrooke, and then, boom, he's in New York. Whammo. That's faster than a speeding bullet. So, and it was very tender when Bay called him Papa.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Hearts melted everywhere when that happened, because I was like, oh, because here he's been so mad at him and wants him out of his life. And then he's hurt. And then he realizes that, you know, this is his father.
And that was another thing, is blood and family really was another type of thread in this one.
Yes.
It's because Emma really was kind of knocking Neil around. It's like, why do you care? It's like, look, you know, he was dying in front of me.
Yep.
He's blood. I you know, you say well, what you want.
The whole attack was one of those things. It's like, what the?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. I mean, I'd seen a preview, you know, in the commercial, mm-hmm. so I knew it was coming, but it was still just very shocking when it happened. Cause I was hoping that it was a dream or that, you know, there's something not right about it, but oh my gosh, it was a horrible. I wanted to smack Hook, and I love Hook, but I wanted to smack him upside the head.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to go, definitely we're going to be going long, so this may be kind of first thoughts and a half or something.
Anyway, go ahead, keep going. All right,
so that whole interchange between Gold and Henry was kind of really strange. You know, he grabbed him, he said, you did this, you brought us here, you know.
He thinks he is the prophesied
right.
boy, young boy, that would be his undoing.
Mm-hmm. Hook makes poison. That's interesting. I would have never thought about that.
He used poison on his hook. Whether he made it himself or not is a whole other ball game.
The line is that Hook made this. So
okay, well, you know, and maybe being that he's a pirate and he sailed all over the world, he might have learned how to do that from somebody, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Maybe Mila taught him, for all we know.
Stab happy pirate.
Emma referring to locking up the stab happy pirate in the thing. That was pretty funny. That was quite amusing, actually.
So the Jolly Roger is a flag, not a ship.
Yes. Emma said, so what, we're taking the Jolly Roger instead of a car? And you can't take a Jolly Roger because a Jolly Roger is the skull and crossbones black flag. That's the Jolly Roger. It's not a ship. So, but I thought that was kind of interesting that she pulled that line out because, you know, most people think Jolly Roger, they think of pirates. However, it is a flag, not the ship. If she said the Flying Dutchman, that would have been a whole different ballgame because the Flying Dutchman mm-hmm. was a ship.
You're our only hope. So we got Star Wars again.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
And
that was Mother Superior, Mary Margaret saying to Mother Superior, you're our only hope.
Yep. Snow, Blue Fairy, yeah, okay. Both Cora. So we talked about that.
Right.
And it's interesting that the Cora fairy said, you know, death is just the way of the world. And that does sound very Cora-like.
So now let's get into what we're actually talking about. What we're talking about now is when Little Snow goes to the Blue Fairy in mm-hmm. the forest.
Yep.
And the fact that she didn't have to make a wish upon the blue star should have been a clue to her that it wasn't the Blue Fairy. And she even asked, she goes, wait, I didn't even make my wish. She's like, I knew you were in need. I think that's not the case at all. I think that you do have to call upon the Blue Fairy in order. I don't think she's, you know, that should have been a clue for Snow. And that should be hopefully a reminder clue for Snow as well. But,
that's another question is, did Johanna beseech the Cora fairy for something, because she knew specifically where to go. It could have been a story that everybody just says, okay, this is what you do. You go to where the sky is the clearest, you go in the forest. And
she said that she wasn't supposed to know about it, which makes me believe she actually followed Mama.
Yeah, her mom. Yeah, her mom did have it. Was a confidant, she said.
She said it was a confidant few know about. Yep, and she says, I'm not even supposed mm-hmm. to know about it. She said, but if you go out here, and I think probably what happened is probably she noticed the queen would disappear in the evening and then come back. And I think, honestly, that she followed her out one time and hid, you know, kind of spied on her. And that's how she knew. Because I don't think that the queen would have told her that.
I wonder what Snow's mother needed from her.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, too. Possibly, because if you look at the original Snow White story, the real true one, the queen longed for a child and wished that she could have a child because she was sewing near the windowsill in the winter. And she
pricked her finger,
and three drops of blood landed on the snow that was sitting on the ebony window pane. And she wished for a child who is white as snow, red skin, white as snow, lips as red as the blood, and hair as black as the ebony frame. And she got her wish.
Mm-hmm. She also, Cora Fairy, my opinion, mm-hmm. Also said that would be breaking the laws of nature. Again, another red flag for some good being
right.
talking about, well, it's dark magic and you're going to break the laws of nature and all this kind of stuff, I'll go, whoa, wait up.
The real blue fairy, I think, would have been able to tell her, we can't bring anybody back from the dead.
Because that's what she told Jiminy.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I can't make that happen.
Right.
But, I mean, she could have said, look, I mean, well, there's a way. Let me explain. So.
Yeah, that would have been a good
builds,
red flag.
That builds another part for my case. So.
Yeah.
So hold the candle over the heart.
Mm-hmm. That right.
That was what I believe Little Snow's test.
Yeah.
Here is the wrong way to do something. Will you do it? And really, I mean, that was a tough test. You know, she loved her mom.
Absolutely.
She didn't want her mom to die.
No, but at the same time, she also knew that what her mother wanted for her was to be good. And she even said that. So I can't do this. No, I can't. And the whole point was what killed me. And this is where Cora's just so evil. Who must die?
Mm-hmm.
You right. have to make that choice. What?
Mm-hmm. And actually, it kind of reminds me a bit of Cora's little Archie Hopper thing, because
mm-hmm.
Archie looked like he died.
Right.
And remember, she said, I don't know who the other one was. Remember
right.
that?
Yeah.
So, again, I'm
new in town. I don't know who
right.
who this is.
So, I mean, that's another interesting question we still don't know the answer of. Archie
right.
really survived. But the body that was killed in his office was somebody else.
Right.
So that's another connection.
That she did yeah. shape-shifting.
Yeah.
Which actually begs the question, where is Archie these days? Just out of curiosity.
Know. He's filming over at Ed Begley's house. I saw a post. Oh, Raphael Sabarch. Okay. All right. So Emma didn't know about the dagger either.
Mm-mm.
So.
And why would she?
Yeah.
She just barely learned about all this stuff, so there hasn't really been time, and I don't think it's really kind of one of those things you just go, oh, and by the way.
I'm sorry. Let's skip back to Bailey Madison. She really has come into her own. I mean...
Oh, so, yeah.
I saw... What was that movie with...
Just Go With It?
Brooklyn... Yeah.
With Adam Sandler, Jennifer right, Aniston, right. Brooklyn Decker. Yeah. Just Go With It.
Mm-hmm. You notice the name I mentioned.
Yeah,
anyway... I thought she was really funny.
Oh, she was
just
hilarious.
Fantastic, you know.
And, she was absolutely hilarious.
But she has really just grown as an actress.
She's one of those kids, you look at her and you go, gosh, you know what? That girl's got a career ahead of her. Mm-hmm. She's got a definite future. And definitely, she's one to watch.
But I mean, another part of that goodness is coming and admitting to her mom, I can't trade another life for yours.
Right.
Basically, you're going to die. I could have saved you, but I can't. I can't do that. That's
right.
It's wrong.
Right.
And so, you know, her mother said that you made the right choice.
Right. Well, because she said, I was too afraid. And she goes, that's not fear. That's strength.
Right.
And, that was interesting because, again, yeah, that was another bit of wisdom, even mm-hmm. on her deathbed, bestowing wisdom on Snow.
So what's the other strength? There was making the right choice, not choosing evil. That's a strength. And then the other strength that we know is what?
I don't know where you're going with this.
Love.
Sorry. Oh, yes, you're right.
Love is not weakness. It's
strength. Right.
Yep.
Oh, very good. Very good.
All right. Okay, so...
The dying scene was extremely, oh my gosh, heart-wrenching. And Bailey, again, did such an amazing job with how she handled that. I mean, that for a young girl of her age to pull that kind of emotion out, wow. I mean, that whole, right as her mother did her last breath, and she just kind of, oh no. I mean, it was just, heart-wrenching.
Yep. And, you know, it did remind me of the scene when Snow was crying with Regina after her father died.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that whole scene.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about the dagger when Emma was talking to Gold about it and said, okay, where is it? We need it. You can't, come on now. Well, we, you know, you don't want them to find it, do you? And he says, my dagger hasn't, I believe the line was, it hasn't left my side for centuries.
It hasn't left my possession for centuries.
And my thinking was,
and it isn't
was,
going to now.
Right. My thinking was, okay, I thought of something else. Initially, I thought that it should have been in his cane or something.
I thought it was like in his bag. That's what I honestly thought. He had it with him in his bag.
But it turned out that it was in the one of the hands of the clock. And I think it was
strapped to the minute hand.
Yeah. Yeah, because it was the longer one of the two, I think. So, yeah, and that's where it was, which is kind of a perfect thing. But I was just thinking about the hidden immunity idol in Survivor.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the knife. Because if he makes a statement like, it's not going to leave me now, I don't think that's the right knife. I don't think that what that's...
Wow. That would be interesting if that's the case.
I think he still has it.
Now, that would be real interesting if that is the case.
And you know where I think it is? I think it's either in his boot or some kind of something. I think it's maybe associated with his limp. Like maybe, because remember Forrest Gump had those metal
things? Metal
maybe?
Braces. Uh-huh.
Anyway, I'm just kind of sorting this out, but that's what I think.
Wow. That is interesting. That's a great theory that could be a decoy.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Interesting.
Because they didn't try anything. They didn't do anything with it.
Well, they can't until he comes back.
So?
They can't until he comes back.
That'd be a great twist.
That's, oh, my God.
I'll put a small amount of money because that's all I got.
All right.
that is not the dagger. And when they're going to try it, you know, I'll bet you that that's the one that Pinocchio used. And it's not the right one.
Yeah, it's possible.
Or think about, think about this, is if that dagger was in the clock, what was buried? How did Pinocchio find it? You get me?
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah. Maybe he's got decoys all over the place.
Oh, my God. I think he's got 7 to 10 hidden around. No, I'm serious.
Interesting.
Like Russell Hans crawling up and, you know, getting that thing out of there, going over there, you know.
You know what? I think that's brilliant. Having a decoy, having a number of decoys. I think that's fantastic.
See, people, write that down. Tweet that out. Say, Jeff's the biggest nut ever, and he has this crazy idea.
I'm on board. I'm on board. I think that's very viable and would, like you said, make a great twist and would actually make him as smart as we think he is. Because it's starting to look like he's losing it a little bit because he's not aware of a bunch of stuff. So I think it's real interesting. Either he's playing everybody or he really is losing it, and we'll see what happens.
Think about... Because when Pinocchio commanded him, he didn't do anything.
He didn't do anything, right.
He just looked, he goes, my son wouldn't do that.
Right.
So I think he's using a decoy to kind of find out who he was. Anyway, that's where I'm going with it.
No, but I agree with you because I remember asking the question, hey, why didn't it work?
Yep.
And maybe it's because it's a perfect replica. He can conjure up all kinds of stuff. Why wouldn't he be able to conjure up replicas?
I'm going with this.
Hey, he kept the potion for true love inside in an egg and a dragon.
Right.
So who's to say he didn't hide the real dagger somewhere else?
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. And again, another biblical term, I shall never leave you.
Well, that's Snow's because, mother died. When she
so,
said,
I mean,
yeah.
It was just, again, I think they love to kind of tuck these little references throughout.
Sure.
Like Lost did. Because there are certain things that you kind of go, you know, I resonate with that. And other people go, I don't. I resonate with this over here. And I go, that doesn't mean anything to me.
Right.
But anyway, so. But yeah, the heaviness of the tiara was just a responsibility.
Right. Because when her mother originally said to her, it's heavier than it looks, I don't think she was referring to the actual piece of jewelry. I think she was referring to the weight of responsibility, which comes with, you know, the position of being a princess, being a queen, a future queen. It makes it, yeah, responsibility is a very heavy thing. So you can't take it lightly.
Right. Oh, I see what you did there.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yes. So initially I thought that it's interesting to look at the placement of things, like when they were setting up for Snow's birthday / coronation, whatever, crowning, is that the seats for the, I would imagine, the queen and the princess, or the king and the queen, I'm not sure, there's only two, that had a covered thing. That was very reminiscent of Charming and Snow.
Yes.
You know, when they were watching the
execution that they stopped,
execution,
that she stopped.
Right. Mm-hmm. But the place where the seats were was the place where her mother was laid to rest.
Right, because that would have been the normal place for it. So that would have been their place of, you know, surveying the crowd and being put on a pedestal.
Well, okay. I haven't specifically looked at it, but I thought for a second that that was the castle where, because I looked at the windows in the back, and it kind of looked like the windows in the castle where Maleficent was, but that didn't make any sense, so I'm going to retract that. But that's what I thought initially.
Well, and who's to say? I mean, the same, you know, craftsman didn't, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know what
so,
I mean?
Yeah. And that scene when the body was, you know, kind of laid there.
Yeah, laying in state.
Right. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the costumes to me looked medieval to me. I mean, they're great costumes.
Oh, my gosh.
And as a matter of fact, I have to say that the CGI folks that did the walls and things, you know, the fire looked CGI fire, but the walls were incredibly well done. I mean, we saw it on a big screen and it was amazing looking.
Yeah, the set decorations were pretty amazing. And Eduardo, he kills it every time. The costumes he comes up with are absolutely just stunning. Mm-hmm. I mean, the queen's red dress off the shoulder, stunning, gorgeous gown. And then even little Snow after, you know, at the funeral, essentially, that black gown was gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
So he, Eduardo's very, very gifted.
So a lost connection is Johanna coming up. And it was a very interesting scene where all the people were there. She came up the middle aisle, which is what she did in the beginning of the episode, too, when she kind of showed her dress to her mother.
Right, right.
So, again, she came up the middle row to greet her mother for the last, you know, after she
had
died.
Pay her respects.
And so she knelt, which kind of reminded me of the Snow and the Team 7 on the street.
Mm, right.
They bowed. But they didn't kneel, though. They bowed before. Okay. All right. Kind of different.
A little bit different. But this, again, was a sign of respect. You'll notice there were no chairs in the entire place. Everyone was standing. And they were standing in perfect, neat little rows.
Yep.
So it's very organized. And when she got down on her knees, they all did as well.
I think it was one knee, but got it. Yep.
I think she went down on both knees, but anyway.
Okay. But then they faded out the crowd. That was well done, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
You just showed time, obviously.
Right.
Passing.
Right.
And but then Johanna came up and said, it's time to let her go.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They're lost.
And then the reveal.
Mm-hmm.
Cora.
Yep.
Faking like she was the Blue Fairy.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that costume. I don't know how she can stand that.
Right.
I thought that was kind of a funny line. There were a couple of funny lines in this episode that if you really weren't paying attention, if you were so caught up in the emotion of it, you'd miss them. But
when Prince Charming said, you know, something to Mary Margaret, and he said, "Well, tell that to my head," you know, because she was just focused on, you know, we gotta, you know, But the reveal and then the kiss on the finger, you know.
Oh my gosh, I wanted to go through the screen and go, no.
Yeah.
you don't get to do that. And again, that whole conversation, that whole piece where she explained, you know, poison looks really good on you. It's definitely your color. I'm like, oh, creepy, creepy, creepy. And then the kiss and the whole thing of, yeah, I'm destroying you so my daughter can be queen. I'm going, wait.
Yeah.
This whole, and that's what made me think that Cora's pulling the strings, like all the strings, because we've always had this assumption that Rumpel's the reason everything's happening because Rumpel's trying to get Bay.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, what I really think is that it's Cora the whole entire freaking time
pulling
all the strings, because she's had this vengeful thing against Snow. Because she went after her mother. So is it against Snow or her mother? And if it's her mother, what's the connection? What is the connection between Snow, Cora and Snow's mother?
But I think in the next couple of weeks, we're going to see somebody behind Cora that's really pulling everything. It's like circles. We keep getting a bigger and bigger circle.
Right. But again, that's why I think, because obviously she has something major against Snow's mother. So maybe we'll see who Snow's mother, you know, maybe we'll see some more backstory of that. I don't know. We did get to see little snippets and I won't say anything about it.
Right.
Miller's daughter. And I have a potential theory about that, but we'll see how that kind of works itself out.
Well, you know, the one thing she did say is, now you'll know how I felt being the Miller's daughter.
Right.
And
right.
We did see a bit of that in the clip that we're not going to talk about, but probably is all over the internet now, and
I'm sure it probably
spoiled
is
spoiled everywhere, so
yeah, but we won't do that.
Nope.
So but yeah, that was my big question, is what exactly is her beef with Snow's mother?
Mm-hmm. Yep,
there's something there, and is that the driving force behind everything she's doing, or is there something even more, and this just happens to be one little extra, you know, thing in the kitty?
Yep. Cora mentioned that she wanted to destroy Snow's mother's legacy.
Yes.
And I think that's probably more powerful than a person, because legacy goes way beyond
a
life.
Right.
It's timeless. And yeah.
Right. Because she said, you wanted your daughter to be good, and I want to destroy, you know, your legacy. And wow.
So, and if you listen to the discussion, that Cora is, you know, manipulating when we have the reveal in the clock tower of when they're all there and they, Regina and Cora appear, and, you know, you start to listen and you start to think, well, good is weak, but good is actually bad, because, you know, all these different things that she was saying, and basically you don't learn anything. It's, you know, so. And if you listen to that, then you start thinking about things like, well, it's the way of the world and all that. And then that's when Belle started to go off more and more about the whole Cora Fairy thing. So we have another near death with the magical heart, you know, poor Johanna.
Right.
Who appeared. And
because they conjured her up.
Right. And but I do want to talk about one thing when Cora said, I killed your mother so Regina would be queen. And if you watch her face, just the shock of, she played me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very much so.
You know,
Regina is I think that there's a seed of doubt, a tiny little seed of doubt in Regina's mind right now.
Yep.
Because of the fact that she had no idea. Because again, she played her so she could be queen. But again, if Regina thinks about it, thinks very hard, that means Regina should realize that her mother knew all along about Daniel, and all she had to do was just find a way and a reason and blah, 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 and find a scapegoat to blame his death on.
Mm-hmm.
If Regina really follows that path, Snow was the scapegoat for Daniel's death. And the reason why is because, for whatever reason, she wanted her to be queen. But here's the thing that kills me, okay? So you think it's still just eating away at me. She even said, but mother, I am queen. So what are we doing? What is this all about? And then it becomes very clear it's not about Regina becoming queen. That's just a small little part of it.
Yeah. What is it?
So what is the driving factor? Because again, even more than that, it can't be that she's living vicariously through Regina. That's a load of horse pucky. Here's why. Because she herself became Queen of Hearts.
True.
So if it was all about because I can't be a queen, you be a queen, that's a load of crap because she became a queen herself, right? So it can't be about becoming a queen. It can't be about that. That doesn't make any sense at all because it's already been achieved. So what's the point of this?
I think we'll definitely find out next episode.
Yeah. And I hope it's a really good reason because.
Yeah.
Wow.
So when Cora sat down in Regina's chair.
Yeah, that was kind of telling. What are you doing? And it was very telling, like you said.
She wanted power.
Absolutely. It's way more than just, simple revenge. Yeah, very interesting.
Okay. So, to build on the whole idea that Cora's pulling all the strings, it was something I was talking to you about. I think we talked a lot about this episode
way back.
And all that is that I think Cora somehow nudged Emma and Neil together.
And
that's
that
what
wouldn't
I think.
Surprise me because although she was stuck in some other realm. So how would she know to do that?
I'm putting it out there that I think
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying that's a question, so how is she able to do that? How is she not able to get to Storg before this?
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It would really be really tough for her to have any kind of influence somewhere else other than in Storybrooke, except for the curse. But once the curse is broken, now she can come there. I don't know. But if you ask me, I think that it was pure coincidence that they got together. And August watched it and realized who he was and realized, oh, wait, this is not good. And that's why he broke them up.
Well, it's another thing is, gold shock of you two know each other.
Right. He didn't know.
How did you two? Wow.
He did not seem to know.
He was so surprised.
Right. He did not seem to know.
And that's why I was like, and then Neil said, when we came together, we could have not broken the curse.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have not played into.
Right.
And
again, that's why I think, and I'm going to throw this out there too. So we know that Gold, quote unquote, helped arrange for Henry's adoption with Regina.
Right.
How did he know about it since he couldn't leave Storybrooke? Mm-hmm. I'm starting to think August, who was able to come and go freely as he pleased, knew exactly what was going on. And because he knew who Emma and August, Bay were. He went ahead and arranged that. He put the bug in Gold's ear. He put the bug in Regina's ear, potentially,
Well, okay. What if we find that somebody that could have gone to Wonderland could have popped over to New York somehow or Tallahassee or whatever? Because we know that people could come and go, like Jefferson, for example, and Regina.
They can't come and go from Storybrooke.
No, from Wonderland.
Oh, from Wonderland. Yes.
So, anyway.
But I still think
something to discuss.
I still think for Emma, the whole Henry thing is that Henry's adoption was actually facilitated by August.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that feeds right back into my theory that August is the boy that was prophesied, not Henry.
Right. And, I think that's viable option. Okay, so Snow is questioning being good again.
Right.
The last time she did this was when she drank the potion.
To forget
the love of Charming.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then she took the pickaxe and got all stressed out with Team 7 and said, I'm going to go kill the queen.
Right.
And there she is again, on that same path. But it's interesting is she's actually the same as Regina because she's realizing that being good doesn't really get you what you thought it would get you.
Right.
It's
not all it's cracked up to be. And I think, too, right now that she has found out that Cora killed her mother for no good reason.
Yeah.
she took her mother from her so Regina could be queen. I mean, that's just a ridiculous, you know, notion. And I'm sure that's where she's thinking. And because of that, her whole being is just, she's not thinking clearly. She's not thinking rationally. She's very frustrated because look how many people have died because of being good. All of her good decisions didn't get her a hill of beans.
The whole idea, let's see. So the whole idea of being good is kind of like somebody who's not a religious person dealing with a religious person, because if they are following the be good, be kind kind of rules, then they know how they will react. And so that's the same thing with Cora. She goes, "You're always good. I know you're going to make the good choice,"
right?
Whatever that is.
Predictability.
You're predictable. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, at the end of all that, she kind of Snow thought about all those different things. And she said, "Well, then I'm not going to do that anymore. That if I'm so predictable, my mother died, you know, the loss of all these things
right.
hasn't gotten me anything. Then I'm going to destroy them. Because they think that they can predict what I do, guess what? I'm going to do something right. different.
She isn't thinking clearly. She isn't thinking rationally at this point. She's very emotional and very upset. And hopefully Charming will get her to recognize that, you know, don't stoop to their level. That's what Cora wants you to do. I mean, he even said it. That's exactly what Cora wants, because it is what Cora wants. Cora right. wants her to abandon her mother's wisdom and to... that would be the way to destroy her mother's legacy.
Right. Okay.
And I think, too, Cora also recognizes... Ooh, here's a little nugget for you. Cora recognizes that if Snow does do something purely evil, it will jack up her relationship with Emma. Because Emma now has... Emma knows that she is going to always do good
and
do the right
thing.
And Henry as well.
Yeah.
And again... destroy the legacy. Henry is her legacy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay, I want to talk about three more things really quick. One thing is the scene with Tamara.
Yes.
Neil's...
fiance.
Fiance. So, I guess my question is, she has some kind of storybook connection. More than likely, she's a rich queen and or princess. I don't want to go with the obvious frog prince.
Honestly,
What's Tiana. The film?
Yeah, the Princess and the Frog.
Yeah. I can't get the names right.
It's all right. I don't think she's Tiana. I really don't. And honestly, I don't think she has any storybook connection at all. I think she's just a regular woman in the real world that Neil kind of loves.
Okay.
And I say kind of loves because let's face facts, he still loves Emma. And he never stopped. He knew he had to leave her. He didn't purposely leave her. And when it comes out that August is the one that did this, that's going to be real interesting to see how that kind of all plays itself out. But I think she's just a regular person. I don't think she has any storybook connection at all. I think that he's going to struggle with leaving her. Now, maybe she'll follow him because she's, and that could,
everybody's going to end up in storybook.
Right. Cause that's going to present some real interesting stuff for them if that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think, honestly, I don't think she has anything to do with the fairy tale world at all.
Well, she's rich.
She's got money, but
because
maybe,
I mean,
she's
you
in
just
a
call and get a car.
Right. Well, but I think that was her car. Do you see what I'm saying?
Okay.
She loaned him her car.
Okay.
Temporarily to get, you know, to get him to the ship.
All right. So that's all. This has gone really long, but I hope this has been informative. And I think we've kind of wrestled through some things and I think come to some kind of cool things. And maybe you're our own. Maybe others have found stuff. But anyway, so the second thing I wanted to talk about is Colleen finally got an autograph with the other man. Robert Carlyle signed Colleen's little autograph book.
Yep.
And
page one, the very first page at all, and I had written on the top PaleyFest 2013, mm-hmm. Eddie and Adam, and then I had written The Queen is Dead, and I was going to take some notes, but it was too dark in the theater, and I couldn't do it. And so his signature is literally the only thing in the middle of the page, and it is beautiful, wonderful, in permanent silver ink.
Well, let me give you a picture. Now, we have not been to a lot of concerts and mosh pits and down front and all that.
Not since I was a teenager.
But the picture is Colleen with this little autograph book with her. Colleen's kind of short and she doesn't have long arms.
Right.
And so, you know, it was kind of sad. I was looking down and she couldn't reach because, look. As wonderful as the cast members are, and they are cool. They were working
amazing.
Back and forth, trying to sign as much as possible.
Yeah.
I kept hearing things like, you know, Robert said, there's so many. I mean, they were just kind of
overwhelmed, yeah,
at all of it. And so when people stand up front, they don't move. They're mm-hmm. not there for one. They're there for like five or six.
For all of them.
And they get up there and they just get excited and they forget that there's people five or six people back right. that really would like to get something signed too, you know. And so I mean, would you want to leave? And it's hard to leave anyway because it's so stuffed
crowded.
With people.
Yeah.
But you know, Colleen's little arm, you know, was reaching out there, and at first she wasn't reaching out. I said, honey, you got to stretch it out there because they're not going to reach over and get it. You have to give it to them. So, but somebody in front of you finally helped and
with Robert,
reached
yeah.
up. And you got Robert's signature. But I have some ideas for next year that'll make it a little easier.
Yeah, so. I hope so.
But that was really great.
I got bruises on my leg.
Yeah.
From where I had a chair arm digging in, mm-hmm. and I had people smushing me. And at one point in time, some guy is like, what's going on? I'm like, I'm being smushed. By who? And I almost said, you dumbass, because he was crowding me in. And I said, by everyone.
Yeah.
I'm thinking to myself, you're standing next to me. How clueless are you? So, but I, you know, it was nice. I would have liked to have gotten, you know, others, but I was really happy that I got Roberts because at least I got that when I didn't get a chance to meet him in Steveston.
Yep.
So,
it was really, cool. And then after we get a chance to meet up with some folks mm-hmm. Out on the sidewalk and we had a chance to chat and then watch, you know, Colin and different people, Lana, leave.
I was stunned by just how pretty Jennifer Morrison is in person.
Yeah.
She's very pretty. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's got this beautiful skin. Her and Ginny, both of them, just stunning. And Lana is too. Oh my gosh. I mean, they look great on screen, but mm-hmm. when you see them in person, it's like, whoa, holy cow. The camera doesn't quite do you just, you know, quite enough justice. And Colin, oh my mm-hmm. Lord, those blue eyes and that smile. Hello.
Well,
anyway,
you know, this is a different type of podcast. So there's the close-ups of Emily DeRavin. I don't think I'll forget those in a long time. Those were wondrous.
Yes. And by the way, I actually like those as well because typically it was Robert on one side and Colin mm-hmm. on the other. So it was a double treat for both of us.
Oh, no. It was when it was just her.
Well, when it was just her, that's a whole different ballgame. But yeah, typically when they showed that kind of corner of it, it was the three of them together. And I was like, oh, this is beautiful.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, but a great event, wonderful day, which brings me to the third thing. I know that, you know, some people, anyway, I do not want to go completely into it, but Lady did have to get back surgery. She's a dachshund. Certain situations happen, and I'm going to post kind of a more longer discussion on that. But the night before the Paley Fest, she did get back operation, mm-hmm. kind of normal for dachshunds, and we're going to go get to see her today. So this is a great day.
And the great news is that she has excellent mobility in both of her legs, which is good because she was having trouble with her back right leg, and that was what kind of prompted the whole thing. And she was basically a walking time bomb and would have lost function in her back legs altogether if we hadn't done this the surgery when we did. Yeah. So she is doing very well. She's, they said she's a very happy little girl. She's very friendly, and she's eating when they offer her food. She's able to go to the bathroom on her own. She's doing really well, and she had good mobility. So, you know, she's of course, you know, very weak right now, and she's going to need a lot of rest, and a lot of extra care. But she is a happy little dog, and so far everything looks like full recovery is there.
All right, so this is definitely the longest first thoughts ever, but a lot of, I think, great information. Mm-hmm. And so if you'd like to add to it, that's what this show is really all about.
Right.
Send us emails and voicemails, and please tweet out when you're listening that you are listening. If you can... If you're techie enough to kind of include the link to for people to get to it, we really appreciate that. I noticed someone was kind of, you know, following a bunch of different oncers, and this other person was inviting these other people to other forums for other sites. You know, and I know that we're not the only game in town.
Right.
But it would be really cool for people to kind of point to us that – listen to us and
right.
and kind of think about that, because, you know, we love to have new folks listening and all that. So anyway, that's it. Long show. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being patient. This is a day late. We'll be talking at you soon.
Thanks.
See you guys.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you for being a part of this podcast. This is an unofficial podcast dedicated to the ABC TV show Once Upon a Time. This is Wayne Henderson, the voice of the Once Upon a Time fan podcast. And if you want to know more about how my voice acting services might work for you, check out MediaVoiceOvers.com. And now, all of us here at Roni's Own Media and MediaVoiceOvers.com look forward to sharing the love and enjoyment of the Once Upon a Time TV show next time. Take care.